Hello everyone, this is Adam. Like last week, we have a small request and something a little different here at the beginning of the podcast. For 5 years, Matt and I have done this podcast without asking anything from our listeners besides the occasional tweetbag question. On October 4th of this year, our brother Mark passed away. If you are a frequent listener, we'd ask that you go and donate to a college fund for his four children. Anything given would be appreciated. Now, let's get going with this week's podcast. It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 208. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News joins us to talk about what went wrong against San Jose State and how that might haunt the Cougars against Missouri. Matt and I then preview Missouri and forecast the rest of the season. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout and on Twitter at BYU_riseshout, and listen to us yap right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Brandon, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Basketball's about to start. We're in the middle of football season, so it's a good time to be a Cougar fan.
Oh, it's awesome. I love this time of the year. And because I cover preps, this is when the high school playoffs are going down. So there's a lot of good stuff. A lot of BYU commitments, actually, that you'll be able to see play this weekend at Rice-Eccles Stadium. So it's my favorite time of the year for sure.
Yeah, it is a great time of year. Well, we'll start off with football before we get to hoops here in a minute. Obviously, the big story surrounding this weekend's game with Missouri has become a non-football story. The story about the protests on campus and potentially the football players not playing, of course, that has resolved itself at least to the point that the football game will go on. How has that affected, if at all, BYU, do you think, up to this point? The story kind of blew up quickly and then got resolved, I would say, fairly quickly. But how has this affected the Cougars?
It's an interesting question. It's really hard to know exactly how much, but one of the strengths that Broncos had since he's become a head coach is he's able to maintain just a consistent approach up to every week. A lot of people criticize that he doesn't get his team up for important games, but in a game like this, I think it's going to be effective in that the players, and also with BYU players being probably more mature just in age and experience than most players throughout football, I've never felt that this would be a big problem for this team. You look at a guy like Adam Hine, who I presented to the media on Monday, which was a hectic day. I counted the heads. There were actually 38 media people there for interviews on Monday. And he was able to just give a clear and coherent statement, just kind of speaking for the whole team. And I think it was just kind of reflective of just what BYU is as a team in general. So I never thought that. Where it's going to play is just Missouri. You have a team that's just lagging, not really playing inspired football at all. This might really give them a kick in the rear and get going, just playing for something more than just a low-end bowl bid. So I think that's where the story is come Saturday. Thankfully, it was resolved right before we did interviews. And they can look forward to it so that this isn't festering, so that they know what's going to happen on Saturday. It's going to be a challenging game, particularly if BYU is not able to field a healthy offensive line. Sure, Kyle Johnson's returning, but you kind of wonder how effective he's going to be. There's lingering issues with Riker Matthews and Louis Lapuaho. It's 50-50, as relayed by Bronco on Monday, if he's going to play or not. That's a problem. We saw against San Jose State how much of a problem that is. Tijon Kuroma is back, which is going to alleviate a lot of the deficiencies that we saw with San Jose State, but that's going to be a big thing because Missouri's, I say unquestionably the second best defense BYU has faced this year next to Michigan, and they're probably comparable to Michigan when you're looking at just the talent on that side of the football and what they're able to do. So I think it's going to be a very challenging game and an interesting game.
Well, when you say close to Michigan, and I agree with you, they're a very high quality defense, really good athletes, some future NFL players on that roster on the Missouri side, on the defensive side. Of course, the BYU fans will start thinking about, well, you know, that Michigan game did not go particularly well for the offense. What can the Cougars do this time that would maybe make that change? Because against Michigan, it was, you know, 2 yards per play. I mean, it was one of the worst offensive performances since Mendenhall's been the coach. How do they not have a repeat of that against a really good defense?
Well, it's interesting. What Michigan did so well is the man press coverage, and we heard a lot about it in the post game. And Holiday mentioned that he is just going to make sure that these guys know how to get off man press. When you look at BYU's history, that's always been a weak point. Utah does it every year to BYU. Fans wondering why BYU kind of lays eggs offensively against Utah, right there. And Missouri, without looking at their cornerback play too closely, I'm assuming they have very good quarterbacks that can execute a man-free system, which is to mean maybe a single high safety and everyone's playing man. That if you can do that effectively, you can beat just about any offense thrown at you. So BYU's ability to get off press man coverage, which I think we will see against Missouri, is going to be enormous. Absolutely enormous. And also, BYU's ability to mount an effective running attack, I think, is going to be a lot more capable than it was against Michigan with Algie Brown. You've seen how effective Algie Brown can be. A guy that just, it seems like he runs to contact. Whereas most running backs are running away from contact. He just lays it straight on, and that's the kind of guy that can just wear down a defense. Francis Bernard, the same thing. I don't know how much we're going to see of Adam Heaney. He started out okay, but coach has just determined, no, you're not ready to go. So we'll see how much he plays. But even absent Adam Heaney, you like BYU's ability to maybe forge a rushing attack that the opposing defense has to respect. And that was a big thing against Michigan. BYU wasn't able to do that. It's not going to be easy, particularly if the offensive line isn't as healthy as we've told it's going to be. It's really hard to get accurate injury information out of BYU these days. So we'll see on that. But I definitely it's going to be the biggest challenge this defense has faced.
Yeah,
I mean, offense.
Yeah, definitely. The offense, it's going to be a massive challenge. They're very talented. Flip to the other side of the ball, their offense has – it's almost comical, Brandon, yeah. When you look at the statistics, that there's an SEC team that's this – poor at offense, and their name isn't, say, Vanderbilt or somebody like that. This is Missouri, who's had very good offenses, not in the too distant past, but this one is pretty bad. You know, with the BYU defense playing better over the last few weeks, do you think this is just one of those things and could be one of those games, not unlike with Connecticut, where it was 9-6?
Yeah.
Or do you think somebody somewhere, either their offense comes together or the BYU offense breaks it open a little bit that makes this not quite such a defensive slugfest?
It was interesting. I was on a radio program, a Ben Krill show here in the local market, and we were talking to the Missouri reporter, and his last words to us was take the under, right? So just kind of joking, like. So I go online, and I look it up to see what the posted total is, and there's no posted total for the game. Vegas doesn't want to put it over-under bet on this game, which I think is very, very interesting in that, yeah, it's going to be so low that they can't imagine a line that's going to be low enough where it would be profitable for them. Yeah, I expect a dog game. That 17-16 game you saw last week, maybe lower than that. If you like defense, yeah, this is going to be your game, because BYU's defense is playing very well, very well. That was the positive thing coming out of San Jose State, and you look at what Missouri has, their quarterback play is not good. You like BYU's ability to forge a consistent pass rush, which has really been the turning point for this year's defense compared to last, in my opinion, was that they're really able to get to the quarterback. And you're really seeing guys like Bronson Tafusi getting guys' head. And Missouri's quarterback Lockett, seeing him play, he's not a guy that you worry about. much at all. And I don't see him being able to dissect BYU's defense effectively. We've been surprised before with this sort of thing, but I'd be very surprised if Missouri was able to score over 20 points on this defense, let alone even 14. It's not an impressive offense in any way, and BYU's defense seems to be peaking, so I think you can expect a very, very low-scoring game.
So speaking of that, Brandon, one of the things I've noticed, and I've heard the coaches talk about it a little bit, but it seems to be underplayed so far among fans, is the performance of Michael Davis on the outside as a corner. He doesn't get thrown at very much this year. Some of that talent that we talked about a time or two ago when you were on the show, when they switched him over to defensive back, the speed that he has is kind of showing up. And do we actually have kind of a shutdown corner now that can actually play that? And maybe that doesn't come into account this week against Missouri, but he's been pretty effective keeping people away from his side of the field so far this season.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because when a cornerback's truly doing a good job, you never notice it at all.
Right.
And I think that could be said about Michael Davis. It's like, oh yeah, he's playing. What's he doing? Well, he's doing work so that you're not seeing quarterbacks throw the ball his way a lot. He's doing a tremendous job. I wish he would talk to us. He's kind of been one of those guys that just avoids the media, that doesn't want to talk to us, because I think he is a very big story. Because I remember a media day back in the summer. We were talking about the cornerback depth, and it was all about Jordan Prater. Mike Hanneman's coming on. Shelton's looking good. Michael Davis wasn't a guy that they would talk about at all, which I thought was very interesting. It was just kind of like, oh, yeah, he's not doing it at all. But in fall practice, we really saw him rise up and take that spot and be a lockdown guy. And they really needed him to, because with the issues with Jordan Prater becoming eligible and going through some team discipline issues, he really needed to step up, and according to coaches, they were not high on him at all coming off of spring practices. So I think that has been a very underreported thing in general, just as far as what he's lent to this defense. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that's a very good point, the work he's done. And Micah Hanneman, he's kind of the cornerback whipping boy. Every year fans find a cornerback to whip on, and yeah, he had some struggles early on, but I think he's really rounding into form, and these guys are really progressing. And now that Prater's back playing his natural position at safety, that nickel package, which BYU has used a ton this year, becomes that much more effective, because you pair him with Kai Nakua and Michael Wadsworth, who I believe is the single best story on the team. And BYU's been able to do a lot of good things, and you really like how this defense is playing.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot better, and if you had told me that the strength of the defense at this point of the year would be getting pressure on the quarterback and covering wide receivers, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have thought.
And it goes together.
Yeah, it goes together. And they're doing a great job right now. So let's switch to hoops here for a moment, if we can. One of the things that we don't have, obviously, we just have preseason, and man, if you were on Twitter with BYU fans for that final tune-up against Alaska, you would have thought BYU might end up with only 5 or 6 wins this year. So let's kind of start from that standpoint, Brandon. Have you seen anything in preseason that makes you worried? I mean, Dave Rose in the after game did not seem particularly impressed with how they had played, and he's usually not quite that direct in a negative way with the media after games. But tell me, what are we seeing, and how worried should we as fans be about what we've seen in these first couple of preseason matches?
I think it's a concern. I think what's directly responsible to it is you look at their first game against Arizona Christian. They were tied 44 at the half. It's like, well, what the crap's going on? And second half, guys were just gunning from all spots and making those shots. And it was good because they were making those shots. Second game, BYU is able to build a 14-point lead against Alaska. You just assume it's going to take off from there. No, they're actually outscored by Alaska. And you look at the shot selection, it was terrible. These guys are just gunning away. But there's no flow of the offense. There's no really movement. There's no rhyme or reason to it, which is kind of ironic because it was the first game Kyle Collinsworth was back. But a lot of that is just they're not used to working with Kyle Collinsworth. Coach Rose did say, I think the key what he said was, I'm seeing it in practice. It's really frustrating that I'm not seeing it in games. And if that foundation is there where they are working well in practice, you think it's only a matter of time. I don't know if that's going to translate against Utah Valley. I think missing some of the low post players, I think getting Corbin Kafusi back is going to be good, along with some of the other low post players that were absent against Alaska. But you need to see better flow, and you need to see better defense. I think that's the one thing where Quincy Lewis is really going to benefit this team as a whole, because you look at those long peak teams, and having covered them, it was defense. Defense started everything. He's a defensive-minded coach, and that's what you need to see BYU be more active in doing, is just getting those stops, getting out on the break, and just getting some easy baskets and not settling for three-pointers too much. You're never going to see a Coach Rose team hold the ball. They're going to shoot when they're open, but getting better shots is kind of the impetus what I think they're going to be working on this week leading up to the Utah Valley game. But that's why you play exhibition games, huh?
Right. Get these things out before you play for real. So just looking forward, Brandon, I'll get you out on one last question here. Looking forward at those newcomers, Eights, if you want to consider him a newcomer, Davis, Emery, Hartsock, which of those guys that was not part of the team last year, when all is said and done at the end of this year, do you think is going to have made the biggest impact for this team?
Well, I think you look at Kyle Davis. I think he's definitely the guy you look at. You just talk to players. He's the most skilled low post guy, the guy most ready to do it. I think the guy with the most upside is going to be Corbin Kafusi. I just talking to people off the record, they say he's really making those strides that you expect him to. Expect a lot of hook shots. That's basically all they focused on, is so that he can get an effective low post hook. And I think when he comes in, that's going to change a lot of things for the BYU team, where they're going to be able to run a flowing offense with legitimate low post threats. It is going to be a huge key for this team. Small Ace is kind of frustrating. You saw what effect sitting out an entire year with injury can have. It's just coming back physically. There's going to be some bumps, and I think we've seen that initially. I wouldn't expect much from him early on. We'll see on that. But I just think with Collinsworth's going to calm this whole thing down, Chase Fisher to some degree, and I expect this thing to get flowing. I against Utah Valley, who's not a very good team, there might be some tough points, but ultimately the talent's there. They have enough experience. I think this team's going to be fine.
Good. I think you're right. I think they'll be fine. There may be some bumps early in the season that'll make us nervous, but I think they'll come together and gel. Well, Brandon, thanks for taking time out to come out on the podcast. We always appreciate your perspective, and hopefully whatever this low-scoring game is on Saturday, BYU is on the right side of a 9-6 or a 14-10 type of game.
Yeah, we'll see. Should be an interesting game.
Definitely will. Thanks, Brandon. We'll have you on again soon.
Anytime.
All right, Matt, CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout podcast. Have you been paying attention much to the NFL?
The National Football League? The league?
The league, the National Football League.
A little bit. Watching a little bit of NFL. You may have heard of the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. Have a little bit of a season.
I've not heard much about them. Are they good at football?
They're okay. They seem to be above average.
Yes. I'd say that's certainly fair. I would say one of my favorite parts about this season as a Patriots fan is how the Bills are quite mediocre.
But really, is that any different than any other season? Come on.
No, but they've got Rex Ryan, self-proclaimed genius.
Did you see what he did today in his press conference?
I did not see what he did today in his
press conference. He showed up to his press conference today wearing a Clemson helmet.
Well, you know, that's as close as he's going to get to being with an undefeated team.
He's got a son on the team, right?
Oh, I did. Yeah, you're right. I forgot.
I still don't know why he wore the helmet. I was at lunch. I was at a work lunch, and I was terribly distracted halfway through the meal when I looked up, and there was Rex Ryan wearing a Clemson football helmet at a press conference.
That
it was very distracting.
I can see why that would be disconcerting.
Yeah, disconcerting is probably a better word than distracting.
I mean, it's not like you were like, cool.
No, that was not my reaction.
That was not your reaction. But Matt, I'd say, is there anything that has surprised you so far in the NFL season? Patriots, and we talk about the Patriots a lot on this podcast. Probably people don't care. But anything that has kind of popped out to you so far this year?
Oh, the Carolina Panthers. I mean, who's not surprised by that? I mean, Cam Newton is a good quarterback, and you know he's not. I don't know that we would have always or necessarily put him in the category of elite quarterback. And they haven't been winning those games by large margins. I mean, it hasn't always been pretty. But if you would have told me at the beginning of the season, list teams that are going to be 8-0, I don't know that the Carolina Panthers would have been on that list.
No, I wouldn't have had them on the list either. And I have to say, the highlight, you know, of the season so far is, I forget who on the Packers throwing the football away from Cam Newton, and then he chases it down and then hands it to a small child.
Yeah, and did you hear the whole story?
No, I did not hear the whole story.
That small child, you can go and Google it, but that small child actually has a very sad story. Cam Newton had no way of knowing that this child had had some personal tragedy happen a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my gosh. No, yeah. I hadn't heard that.
So, but Cam Newton would have had no way of knowing that, and he didn't. They asked him about it later, but he just happened to bring the football to a young boy that I think deserved it.
That even makes it better, because you know, you just like the Packer guy. I assume was just, you know, fine.
Well,
he scored a touchdown.
He hates kids. That's all. That's fine.
Wow! Shots fired. Shots fired, Matt. I don't think he hates children. He may just hate Cam Newton.
Yeah,
he may just hate Cam Newton, and the fact that they were scoring so many points on his Packers defense. So Matt, let's move into Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
So Matt, the number 13 ranked BYU women's soccer team is in its fourth straight conference championship, and its fourth straight NCAA tournament on Saturday against Utah Valley at South Field, which is awesome. The great finish to the season by beating St. Mary's, and then of course hosting the Wolverines on Saturday, Matt.
Yeah, what are they calling that? Like the Parkway rivalry or something?
Yeah, I don't think there's a rivalry, but yes, they're calling it something. I would say this though, they got absolutely hosed based on their RPI and their ranking and their seating, because they'll have to play Stanford in the next round.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So
I'm not saying they're not up to the task, but I think you hope for a different path than that when you get seeded.
Well, I mean, they lost to Stanford at Stanford 1-0 back in September. The good news here, Matt, is that they're going to have Ashley Hatch back for this match. She played against St. Mary's as well, limited minutes, but having your All-American back is a big deal, and I think assuming they get past Utah Valley on Saturday, I would say even against Stanford, as good as Stanford is, I think that's a match they can win.
Yes, it is.
They already proved that earlier this year that they are in that league, and especially with Ashley playing. Matt, also on the women's sports, women's volleyball swept 6 straight sets against St. Mary's and Pacific this past weekend. They traveled to Portland and Gonzaga this weekend, so hopefully another 2 wins for the number 12-ranked women's volleyball team. Matt, it's time to talk about Cougars in the pros with the first pick of the NFL draft.
Boo. Sit down, Goodell. Boo.
So Jimmer This is, of course, not the NFL. Jimmer has signed with the Pelicans, Matt, on excitement level zero to Detmer. What are you saying?
Zero. I mean, this is a hardship waiver signing. They're just doing this because they got so many injured players. They need a guy who's familiar with the system and knows his way around the building. I mean, I don't know that this does not increase Jimmer's chances of cracking this roster. Now, is this a good opportunity for him to get seen by somebody else? Maybe.
Yeah, I doubt that. He won't play.
This isn't a sign that he's kind of playing for the Pelicans.
You know, I heard on BYU Sports Nation today, they talked about that, I believe it was Jason Shepherd of KSL on with Jerome Jordan. And they talked about, you know, he decided not to go to Europe. You and I both thought he should. There are others that don't think he should, and that going to the Development League was his best chance of getting back into the NBA. And that's probably true. I just, at this point, he is viewed as a bottom of the roster guy. And, you know, it depends on what you want to do. And more power to him if this is what he wants to do. And I hope he sticks with the Pelicans and makes maybe some type of bigger impact than he did last year. But I'm not going to hold my breath on that.
Yeah.
In the good news category, Matt, we talked about Max Hall and some of his difficulties. It's being reported by out of Arizona that he is now working as a coach for a small charter school in Queen Creek, Arizona, and doing some coaching with them there. The reporter went and talked to him a little bit. I think I'll just echo what you said on this podcast several months ago. We just hope that this opportunity for him goes well and that he's healthy and able to contribute.
Yeah, I think the key is for him to stay healthy. And maybe this is an opportunity, you know, it gives him something to do while he's getting, and if he, you know, can stay back on his feet, it could be a real good story.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. So, Matt, let's move on from the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News and talk about San Jose State.
Yeah.
And is it okay if I reveal that you fell asleep in the third quarter? Or was it during halftime?
It was during halftime that I fell asleep. So I did miss the beginning of the third quarter.
Didn't miss much.
I missed a couple of plays by T-Bone Moognam, or whatever. Yes. Whatever they started calling
him. Tyler Magnum.
Yeah.
And what were they calling Linehan?
Jerry Linehan.
Jerry Linehan. Come on. We'll start with this now. Okay, Matt. We'll start with this. I was going to finish with it. The announcers were atrociously bad and unprepared.
They'd clearly never seen – they didn't even watch any film. They had no idea what they were looking at.
CBS Sports, quite frankly, should be – I mean, that's unacceptable. I mean, to clearly have not watched any film – I mean, some of the things they said were just – and I get it. You're national and you're covering a lot of Mountain West games, so obviously they're going to be more familiar with San Jose State, and that's fine. I expect that. But just do your homework. I mean, that's your job.
It's not hard to read a name off a sheet. That's the thing about Tanner that I just don't understand, why people keep calling him Trevor and Tyler and all these other names. The Magnum thing I can get over. I've been dealing with that for, you know, going on four decades here. But the Tanner to Tyler, come on. But I'd be really embarrassed if I were one of these announcers or CBS Sports looking at Tanner Mangum's tweet the next day, where he says, "I'll tell that Tyler Magnum guy to not throw any more pick sixes." I mean, he is making fun of the announcers.
Yeah, he is making fun of the announcers and the fact that his family members watching were probably like, "Come on, his name's Tanner." You know, Lapu'ahu probably is used to having his name butchered by announcers. You know, but even that, I don't have much patience for either. You know. Find out, listen to the last game and how the announcer, the home guy, said it.
It's not hard.
It is not hard. So, Matt, this was kind of, quite frankly, it was a brutal game to watch.
Yes.
If you followed BYU fans on Twitter, you would have thought we'd lost the game based on everyone's reaction, and mine were not any different. I'm not being critical of the fan reaction. Matt, did we learn anything? Let's try to spin this positively. Did we learn anything good about the Cougars in that 17-16 victory over the Spartans?
They can hold on. I mean, I'm a silver lining guy. I mean, I'm a glasses half full guy, right?
Yes, you are.
But this was just not impressive. And there's not a – I don't feel like there's a ton in there to get out of this. I mean, San Jose State is not a very good team. We barely squeaked out a win. You know, you try and go in there and think, you know, did somebody have some kind of a really good performance, or did we see something out of a running back that they weren't that we weren't expecting, or any of these kinds of things? And I just don't see it.
Yeah, the answer is no. I will say the defense played well. They played Bronco type of defense. They kept them out of the end zone for the most part, and made some key plays on big downs, including the 2-point conversion. Wadsworth was in the right place to get in the way of that pass a little bit. So maybe that's the one thing. The defense is maybe a little better than we thought they were going to be. But again, this was not a powerhouse offense they were defending.
And we were kind of only in that position for Wadsworth to get in on there on that 2-point conversion as a result of a play that Wadsworth did not make a couple plays earlier.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the non-pass interference that got them that shot at a touchdown. You know, the officials missed some just weird calls, and unfortunately, right now it's a storyline in college football of officials in big situations just absolutely whiffing on what seem to be fairly obvious calls. But, you know, they do have a difficult job. Matt, if BYU had lost, let's say that 2-point conversion is successful and BYU loses 18-17, where does this rank on worst losses in Broncos' tenure, if it had happened?
Oh, it is top 5?
I'd say it's top 2.
Top 3?
I'd say it's top 2. It's this, and this would have been up there with Virginia. This would have been one of the worst teams we ever lost to.
I mean, they were the Fighting Bananas.
Oh, those.
There's high school stadiums in the state of Texas bigger than that,
and with better uniforms. But it would have been it would have been a big loss. Matt, do you agree with the coaching decision for San Jose State to go for 2 points? Would you have done that had you been the coach of the Spartans?
No, never. And I mean, that's fireable. I mean, that's just stupid.
Oh, I don't know if it's fireable, but I wouldn't have done it.
But you're at home, right? You're playing from behind at home. You take the overtime. Take the overtime. It's not like they had some huge momentum swing or any of this stuff. You at home, you always take the tie and go into overtime.
I agree at home. And the one thing I will say is I do like aggressive coaches, and that's an aggressive maneuver. I think, you know, he knew he was outclassed, and this was a chance to steal a win against a opponent that at the end of the season may be ranked in the top 25. You know, he had that chance, but unfortunately, it did not work out for them. Or I should say, fortunately, because that would have been terrible.
That would have been awful. Would have been awful. It felt like a punch in the gut anyway.
Yes. It was not and I know afterwards everyone's like, W's a W, and I get that. It is a W, right? And after this season, if you know, we beat Missouri this week and beat Fresno and Utah State and then win in a bowl game, no one's going to really care or remember this San Jose State game, right? It will just be erased from your memory. But it's what we call a segue, Matt. There is a game this week that I think we may have to take into account how the Cougars played on Friday and how they will play on Saturday. So, Matt, before we get into the X's and O's, absolute crazy week for the University of Missouri. And I shouldn't say week, matter of days, really. I'm not going to run through it all. I think probably anybody listening to this podcast has read lots of stories about what happened on the campus, the hunger strike, the players striking, the coaching staff, unlike other situations, backing up the players and not, you know, making threats on the players if they didn't show up to practice. All this stuff happens, Matt. I want to go to the tweet bag and ask a question from Justin Sweeney. That's at Justin D. Sweeney. He says, why do I fear that the Mizzou O will explode on us for some reason and Mangum will be running for his life? And then I'm going to pair this with a question from Spencer Lindemann. That's at the LDS SDL. He says, given recent events, do you think Mizzou will come out united and motivated or disjointed and flat? So, Matt, let's put those questions together. What is the more likely scenario? Missouri comes out and plays basically the same brand of football they've been playing all year, which is great defense and atrocious offense. Or they somehow come out because of this galvanizing event and their offense explodes. And when I say explode, I mean maybe they get past the 50-yard line a few times.
I think they come out united. I think they come out galvanized. I don't know if I'm expecting them to just light up the field on offense, but I would expect that going through something like this usually has a tendency to unite a team. And so I think we will see some piece of that. But at the end of the day, I think they're going to have a much more effective offense than they've shown thus far this season. I mean, the difference between an offensive explosion and what we've seen so far out of this team, I think that's a lot to expect in a week.
They, according to both just the raw stats and the advanced stats, Matt, are, if not the worst offense in college football, in the bottom five. So, you know, this is not, I mean, and their defense is quite good. We'll get to that here in a moment. But I, going back to this issue, I just think there is no way to know if something like this will be emotionally draining or will be uniting. And whatever happens in the game, the narrative will be, if Missouri comes out and plays terribly, the narrative will be, well, you know, they were focused on things bigger than football. If they come out and beat BYU in an upset, because BYU is favored by 6.5 points, then the narrative will be, we'll see, they came together around something outside of and bigger than football, and it galvanized them. I just think it's impossible to know how this will affect them, and I don't think it's going to transform a terrible offense into a good one, even if they are more united.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a team that in all important offensive statistics is ranked higher than 110th.
Yes. Yes.
You know, points in total points for 128th. I mean, it's just the offense is just not very effective. Now, the defense is decent. The defense has only been giving up, what, like 14 points a game? So they're losing close games. I mean, heartbreaking type of scores, 9-6, 10-3. I mean, that's tough. But they're coming off of four straight losses, you know, where they've put together, you know, a little bit. What, 30 points or something? So
they lost to Vanderbilt, Matt. Yeah, Vanderbilt's 3-6.
But 10-3. It's not like they gave up a bunch of points. They just couldn't score.
No, I mean their defense is quite good. So let's get into that, Matt, in a little bit more detail. Before we do that, though, one of the big stories out of San Jose State was, of course, the lack of health on the offensive line. You had three offensive line missing, two for injuries, one for suspension, and Riker Matthews was limited in his snaps, did not play the whole game, and quite frankly, when he's in there, wasn't particularly effective. Karoma will be back. Riker Matthews looks like he might be at full strength. I think the other two are listed as questionable, Johnson and who else am I missing? Wapo. So we're looking at this. Based on that, Matt, my biggest worry in this game is BYU's offensive line.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think after what we saw last week, I mean, you get in there with kind of a patchwork offensive line, we struggle.
Well, I'll give you my stat of the day for you, Matt. You ready for my stat of the day?
Let's do it.
Okay, here's my stat. Charles Harris. Okay, he is a very talented defensive lineman for the Missouri team. 17 tackles for loss and 7 sacks this year. 17 tackles for loss for 80 yards. And second on the team, Walter Brady, 10.5 tackles for loss, Matt. If our offensive line is not up and ready to roll, it's a pretty... they're going to be in the backfield both on running and passing plays a lot. A lot. So Matt, looking
that's,
at the...
And that's scary.
That is scary. Brandon Gurney on this show just said he thinks they're the second best defense we've played next to Michigan. That both the raw stats and the advanced stats would back that up. 14th overall, 8th against the run, and 33rd against the pass, according to Football Outsiders. Matt, of course, BYU's offense is 32nd overall, 45th running the ball, 45th passing the ball. Very balanced offense so far this year. What is BYU going to have to do to not be in one of these 7-3 slugfests that has been so common for Missouri?
They're gonna have to move the football.
But how? You know, like what does that look like? I mean, it was bad against San Jose State. Not good. The offense was not good.
No, and if they come out and look like they did last week, I think they're in real trouble. You know, you got to look at converting on third down, turning turnovers into points. You know, these types of things that, that's how you win football games. I think when you, especially turnovers into points, I think is a really big deal.
Yes.
And anytime your team gets a turnover and doesn't score off of it, that's a very, very bad sign.
And when your offense gives up points, like Tyler Magnum did last year, throwing that pick six, that, I mean, if we do that against Missouri, that could be lights out, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Oy. So Matt, let's talk a little bit. Let's do some over-unders and some predictions now for the Missouri game going into it. So over-under 400 total yards for the BYU offense.
Under.
They have been held under three times this year against Boise State, Michigan, and San Jose State. I am going to go under as well. Next over under is 200 yards passing for Tanner Mangum.
Over.
I am going to go under on that as well. 350 yards in total offense for the Missouri Tigers.
Under.
I am also going to go under. I think both of us are headed towards a defensive battle by our predictions, Matt. Let's go to the game line. It is right now 6.5 points. It has moved, Matt. It has moved, so it's opened at 4.5, now 6.5 on BYU. Are you taking the points or taking the Cougars?
Am I taking the points or taking the Cougars?
Yes.
I'm not taking 6.5 points.
So you are going with the under on the 6.5 point spread. I am also going with the under. So Matt, this is the time of the podcast where we talk about predictions. So I'll let you go first.
Well, as we've discussed, I have week after week picked this game as a loss.
Yes, you have.
And you've given me a hard time about it.
Yes, I have.
Every week. And as I've prepared for and looked and read and thought about what I'm going to pick and where I'm going to land this week of the game, I think that the performance I was anticipating that would have led to a loss is really what we saw at San Jose State last week. Had that team showed up to play Missouri at Arrowhead, I think you lose that football game. Now, that's not what happened. We got that performance last week. I think what you have to hope for now is that BYU puts something together, shows up for this game Saturday night. But on the flip side of that, I think Missouri is going to be galvanized. I think these guys are going to be motivated. I think they're going to be hungry for a win. I'm just not sure that their offense is going to be quite good enough to get them there. So I am going to flip-flop. I will pick BYU to win this game 14-10.
Wow. That is fascinating, Matt, because I am going to flip-flop. I think this is not as much of a nightmare matchup for the Cougars as the Michigan defense was. I don't think their cornerbacks are quite as good or as physical or as big. But Missouri has incredible team speed, and it's on every position in the defense. They have a guy that's fast, and I think that is going to give the Cougars a lot of trouble. I think the offensive line, if it's not at 100%, and I'm going to assume at this point that Matthews plays and that one of the other two plays, but not at 100%. And if that's the case, I'm going to predict the Cougars lose 17-14, and I think at least one of the touchdowns Missouri scores is going to be a defensive touchdown. And quite frankly, I think the winner of this game could very likely be which defense can actually either score points or get a turnover really deep inside the other team's territory.
I'll tell you this. If Missouri scores a touchdown on defense, they will win the game.
Yeah, I think if either team scores a touchdown on defense, I think because the margin of error for these offenses is so small, I think that is likely to be the case. Matt, over under BYU having 3.5 sacks against Missouri.
Over.
I'm also going to pick the over. We have really turned into a pretty good team at pressuring the quarterbacks. Only 3 last week against San Jose State, but we were in the backfield a lot. And quite frankly, I think the quarterback at San Jose State was better than the one we're going to face against Missouri. So that's that. So we end this segment of the podcast with you flip-flopping to a win and me to a loss. Matt, rest of the season, are you thinking we beat Fresno and beat Utah State?
I think we do. I think we beat Fresno. I think we beat Utah State.
I agree with you on both accounts. I think we beat both of those teams. I think Utah State's victory against Boise was the aberration, not the true mark of where they sit so far this year. So
you just used the word aberration?
I did. Did
you say that on the Rise and Shout podcast? It's kind of highbrow.
This is a highfalutin podcast, okay? Oh. I'll have you know. Apparently. We're top 100 on iTunes.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm not telling you top 100 of what, but I'm just saying top 100. So Matt, let's move on. We've got a few other topics before we go. Matt, there was a story about a week ago written by a friend of the podcast, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune, that got some Cougar fans worked up. I wanted to get your point of view on this. He says that Jay Keeps is kind of a cautionary tale for Tanner Mangum, and that just because Tanner's had a good freshman season doesn't necessarily translate to Tanner being a successful quarterback long-term at the collegiate level. Of course, he also pointed out Jay Keeps was highly recruited. Tanner Mangum was highly recruited. Matt, do you agree with Jay Drew that Jay Keeps is a cautionary tale and we should be worried about that? Or do you think Tanner's situation is significantly different, that the two don't really kind of apples and oranges, if you will?
I think Tanner's situation is so significantly different from here that I don't know that a comparison is really worth it. Things that they have in common: highly recruited out of high school, started as a freshman. Okay. It really slows down after that. Right. And we have definitely learned in the days since, in the post Jake Heaps era, as things have opened up and we've learned about what else was going on for Jake Heaps off the field during that period of time, that stuff had way more of an impact, in my opinion, than anything that was going on in practice or in games. I mean, he had some stuff going on, his stuff got in his head, and I think that is really what led to a lot of his struggles. He was also in this weird spot with him and Riley Nelson and who was going to start. It was a much different situation. I think they've got a different skill set. So I don't know that I buy Jay Keeps as a cautionary tale for Tanner Mangum, just because there is so much different about what's going on here.
See, for me, I'll take all that stuff, which I don't disagree with at all. I think the off-the-field stuff that we have learned could be a massive difference. Obviously, the fact that Tanner's a much older person than Jake was, and I think that counts for something. Maturity, being able to deal with certain things maybe better as a 21 or 22-year-old than you would as an 18-year-old. To me, the difference is actually the play on the field. Jake Heaps did not play well as a freshman, okay? He completed less than 60% of his passes against a terrible schedule and averaged less than 200 yards passing per game. His yards per attempt was bad. You know, he threw 9 interceptions in 10 starts. Tanner is playing better than Jake Heaps. I get where Jay was going with the story. I just don't think, like you, I think the comparison really stops at freshman quarterback, highly recruited. And by the way, Tanner was also more highly recruited than Jake, if that counts for much of anything.
And you know, and that stuff is the highly recruited stuff. I mean, this is, I think Tanner Mangum there is a great example. Take the top 10 quarterbacks that came out of that class. Go to that Elite 11 camp. Winston's really the only one that's come out of there and done much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the jury's still out on Tanner, but the rest of those guys, their college careers are kind of wrapping up. And, you know, I don't know where any of those guys are.
No, I don't think that's the whole thing to me, quite frankly, is this is not that highly recruited thing lasts until they actually start playing. And after they start playing, that's how we evaluate them, right? I get that sometimes people still fall in love with potential, and that's what got Jake opportunities at Kansas and at Miami. But in the end, these guys are defined by how they play between the lines. And I think Tanner's just played better. I mean, I think this will go down as, if not the best freshman QB season for a BYU quarterback ever, I think it will actually go down as the best freshman QB season. And granted, there aren't a lot
who's
of them.
In the who's in the conversation? Well, it's not a very large group. Drew Detmer, Miller, Jake Heaps.
Detmer played some his freshman year, but he didn't play as much as Tanner is playing.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, it's a low bar to cross. Matt, we've done this not every week, but a lot of weeks. So let's talk about the national picture. One up, one down. Give me a team you think made a statement this last week towards getting themselves into the college football playoff, and maybe a team that took a step backwards, in your opinion.
Well, you know, I immediately felt bad after we did this last week, and I thought about what I said. Somebody should have slapped me.
I thought of slapping you, but it's over. We're talking over Skype, so it's very hard to do that.
So I think my one up last week was Baylor.
Yes, it was your one up with Baylor. That was ridiculous. You said that's silly stuff.
That's absurd. Like,
yes,
was
absurd.
Was I drinking before we recorded?
I believe you were. Baylor.
So anyway, I just wanted to take a minute and apologize for that. But this week, one down, one that really surprised me was LSU. I had LSU beating Alabama. I really thought they were going to do it.
I know you did.
I drank the Fournette Kool-Aid, and they put him in a box. And, I mean, they shut him down. He never tore off a big run.
Matt, they didn't load the box. They didn't load the box. They played
shut him down.
Straight up defense. They did not put 8-9 guys in the box against him. They were having 7 guys. I thought the game would be a lot more entertaining. I thought Alabama would win, but I thought Fournette would still get his. That was not how it played out at all.
No, they shut him down.
They shut him down. Absolutely, absolutely. So Matt, that's your one down. Who's your one up?
The Clemson Tigers.
Now they've got to win against somebody that's good.
Well, I think they've got two. I think
two.
Notre
You're
Dame's
right.
a good
You're
football
right.
team
right.
too.
Yeah, they've got two good wins.
And the way they took care of things against Florida State, that looks to me like they are a legitimate contender. When they show up in that Final Four, the college football playoff, I will feel like they deserve to be there. I think they take care of business on the rest of their schedule, but in my mind, that win against Florida State put them in the position where I think they belong.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I'd say my other one-up was Notre Dame. I just had assumed at some point so far this year that they would have lost another game, and they have not. As of today, they're in the college football playoff. A lot will change between now and when that's actually decided. And obviously, beating Pittsburgh is nothing great. But when you look at, they do have some decent wins, and their one loss is against that Clemson team. Yep. That kind of changes things a little bit. as far as maybe how you rate them. After what Navy did this past weekend against Memphis, that win against Navy looks a lot better than maybe it did when it happened. I think my one up was Notre Dame. My one down, Matt, is Iowa, despite the fact that they jumped in the rankings, beating Indiana by 8 points in Bloomington. Iowa's not going to make the college football playoff. Number one, I think that there's a decent shot they lose one of their last three games. I don't think they're that much better than Minnesota. Nebraska, I have no idea what to make of Nebraska right now, but I wouldn't want to play them, right? I wouldn't want to play them at this moment just because I think they might be finally hitting their stride, and I don't think you'd want to play them. But then they're not going to win. They're not going to win the championship. Right?
No, they can't. They're not going to beat Ohio State or Michigan State.
No,
they're not going to get out of that game.
They're not going to get out of the game. So I look at that group and I say Iowa's the team that I say they do not belong in the college football playoff. Now they can earn it if they end up running the table, but even then I look at their wins and I say there's going to be somebody with one loss that's better. Matt. Percent chance somebody from the Big 12 is in that Final Four?
10.
I'm going to say 0. I don't think there's a chance. Baylor's going to lose, and even if Baylor goes undefeated, I'm not sure that's enough because I don't think TCU, I think TCU might lose two more games this year.
I think Baylor's the only reasonable hope, right?
Yes.
It's not going to be TCU. There's really nobody else.
Oklahoma.
They're not going to get up there, though.
No.
You'd have to have something crazy happen, right? Like, so Michigan State beats Ohio State, and then Michigan State beats Iowa. So then they all have one loss. So now maybe you don't get a Big Ten team in there, and Baylor stays undefeated.
I actually think their best shot might be Oklahoma State.
I can give you that. Oklahoma State, yeah.
But the whole problem with the premise of all of these teams is nobody played anybody significantly out of conference.
No.
And that is what is going to keep the Big 12 out at the end of the day, just like it did last year. I keep hearing people say championship game is keeping them out. That is not what kept them out last year, and it's not what will keep them out this year. They didn't play anybody outside of their conference. So they don't have any signature wins like Clemson over Notre Dame, for example, that these other teams have outside of their conference. And their conference isn't good enough to overcome that. So,
well, think about this. You say Oklahoma State, right? So yes. Say Oklahoma State wins out.
Yes.
So they beat Baylor. They beat Oklahoma.
They beat Iowa State.
Now, so if you look at the top four in the college football playoff rankings right now, Clemson, yes, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Assume that assume that all four of those teams
went out. Yes.
Do you take Oklahoma State over any of those?
No way. Oh, I will take a one loss Alabama and a one loss Notre Dame over them. And quite frankly, I'd probably take a one loss Stanford or whoever comes out, one loss Pac-12 champion over them.
Right.
Yes.
So they have to have a scenario where Michigan State, Ohio State, and Iowa all end up with one loss or something silly.
Yes.
And then they would also need Stanford maybe to drop one. I just think it's going to be tough for a Big 12 team to get into the college football playoff.
Yeah. I think it is not a likely scenario, Matt. So. Matt, we don't have, we're running short on time, so I'll get you out. We'll stop with this question. 0 to 100. How concerned are you after the Hoopsters, an unimpressive win in a preseason matchup against Alaska?
I'm not concerned at all. I mean, if on a scale of 1 to 100, that's a pretty wide scale. It's probably something bigger than 0, but it might be a single digit number. I don't worry about these tune-ups.
Nope, I'm not worried. There were fans on Twitter acting like we're going to win 5 games this year. Just chill out, folks. Half of our big guys didn't play. Collinsworth's first actual game action of the year. Let's just chill out and see how these guys do against Utah Valley this weekend before we start getting too worked up.
Yep.
So, Matt, we've got next week, we will talk about our experience at Arrowhead Stadium, since we will both be there. We will preview the Fresno State game, and next week will be our fifth anniversary podcast.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
5 years of doing this podcast, and people still are listening.
Yep.
And I believe that Justin Sweeney and our brother Don are the only two that have listened to all of them.
I feel like we should get Sweeney a gift.
No.
Like, it's his anniversary, too, in a way.
No, it's not.
You're right, it's not. We love you, Sweeney. But
we should get him some law books to put up in his library. No, he's got plenty. Anyway,
my apartment smells of leather-bound books and mahogany.
Rich mahogany. But anyway, we will be back next week, of course, to talk about how this game came out. And I hope you're right and I'm wrong, but it's not usually the case. Usually I'm right and you're wrong. So I'm not. Don't hold your breath, folks. But thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can check us out on Facebook now. That's facebook.com/riseandshout is, I think, what it is. I should probably check that, huh?
Yeah, you probably should.
Yes. It's facebook.com/riseandshout, one word, if you want to like us on Facebook, if you do that sort of thing. Check us out on Twitter at @BYU_riseshout, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!